Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 18th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Alex Perrine of the AP will be here. Also, Andy Kindler of the AK will be here later in the show. Meanwhile, Kharkiv being destroyed by Russian bombing assault, running out of body bags. Meanwhile, diplomats on the cusp of a nuclear agreement with Iran. Biden names a new COVID czar as COVID funding still stalled and U.S. preparedness drying up. Moderna asked the FDA for a fourth shot authorization. And a new report, Saudi-led, U.S.-supported air campaign has killed or injured 11,000 Yemeni civilians over the past 10 years. Some good news. Consumer credit reporting agencies will remove some medical debt from credit reports. Bad news? Why the F do people have medical debt? Tennessee looking to strip a town of its charter. Now that a Ford is building a massive electric car facility and that much of the town politicians are black. Massachusetts climate activists on a hunger strike against a new gas-powered plant in Peabody, Mass. And in the largest trial to date, it is found that ivermectin does nothing to prevent COVID hospitalizations. Please check your nearest Substacker for more details on that, I'm sure. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. It is Casual Friday. As you can see, if you are watching the show, I am wearing a soft-collared shirt. Emma Vigeland, color's a little bit...
It's softish, but I mean, it's you know, more... It exists more so than... All right, Jesus, it is You're Friday. Right? Yeah, yeah. I'm still a little bit... I haven't had enough coffee, but also I was meant to count down to you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 with my fingers, and yet I did it out loud. So
well, that was also a little bit of my mistake of not quite being aware of what's going out live and what's going out hot. So people did hear a nice little Emma countdown.
Yeah, Bradley's out today, so
there you go.
So there we go. Hope all is well, Samuel.
We should have uniforms, little blue, navy blue, soft collar uniforms that we wear on Fridays.
Well, that would actually be nice. I mean, I was very close to wearing a t-shirt today.
Whoa, t-shirt.
Yeah, I know it. It's happened before, but not often.
People would have got alarmed, I think.
Yep. Hostage video.
Whatsoever. Yeah,
look
exactly.
For Sam blinking out, SOS. We got a lot to talk about today with Perrine and with Andy Kindler. There's already people calling for Andy Kindler to deconstruct the Darlene Rudin clip. I'm not sure we're going to do that, but maybe we will. Maybe we will.
Maybe.
We've got it just in case. But we do have a lot to talk about. Let's go into I just want to highlight, where we are on the on the Iran deal just for a second. It's not there yet, but there was a stumbling block. I think maybe it was at the beginning of the week. I can't, time escapes me now forever. This is a multinational agreement, obviously. And, there was at one point the diplomats felt they had gotten to where they needed to get, all the various parties, Europe, United States, Russia, Iran, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was a deal first struck in 2015. Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the deal. It collapsed. And it was one of the best things that the Obama administration had done, as far as I was concerned, in terms of foreign policy. They've been very close. There was a last minute, attempt by the Russians to require more, I guess, it's unclear exactly what the details were, but they were concerned about the idea of Iranian oil coming on the market. And there were some who suggested they were trying to, sink the deal in many ways. There's still a little problems with Russia and Iran. And part of that also has to do with, in terms of the deal. Russia wants to get around some of the sanctions that have been imposed upon them. Mm-hmm. And so it is not a done deal yet, as they say, but it is moving along, and it's sort of the biggest news that nobody seems to be paying attention to at this point. But, of course, we will see. All right. Let's get into this, though. We've been covering this over the past week or so. And again, this is also another story, I think, that is just not getting the attention that, I guess maybe a large part because of the Russia-Ukraine thing. But when we'll talk to Alex Preen about, you know, to what extent the Supreme Court will play a role in the midterm elections. It is not a direct issue for members of the House, but control of the Senate is a big deal when it comes to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has allowed Texas, we've talked about this, to pass a law, find that they can essentially abridge a constitutional right. It is still a constitutional right, according to the Supreme Court, that may change, for women to get an abortion and have unfettered access to that abortion unless there's a compelling state interest, a very compelling state interest. But the Supreme Court has basically said that right can be abridged if it is done through essentially civil lawsuits. And now we're seeing a proliferation of these types of laws around the country. We talked about Idaho at the beginning of the week. We had some questions as to whether Idaho purports that a rapist cannot sue a woman that they have raped over the victim attempting to get an abortion or getting an abortion. But it's just the rapist. Here, any member of the preborn babies, and if the words preborn baby sounds weird to you, it's because there's no such thing as a preborn baby any more than, you know, you could have preconceived babies.
Right.
But here is Idaho talking about the Idaho legislature talking about who can sue the victim of a rapist. This is compiled by The Recount.
I understand that a someone who has committed a rape would not be able to sue if an abortion were to take place. Would a family member of said rapist be able to sue? Would they have standing?
Down to 21. Thank you. If it is the parents, siblings, aunts and uncles, grandparents, then yes.
Same question then for incest as well.
Down 21.
Thank you. Yes.
So if I am raped and choose to have an abortion and my rapist has 10 siblings, is there anything to preclude all of them and their spouses from bringing a lawsuit for $20,000 each?
Down for 21.
I'm not sure their spouses are included in that list, but no.
Yeah. Wow.
You had that question earlier in the week. Could you have multiple people sue a woman who has gotten an abortion? And there you have it.
So, right. That this just ensures that the distant relatives, the relatives of said rapist have, I would say, demonstrably more rights than the, according to the Idaho Republican Party. I mean, this is how they view women. The vessel of carrying that child, the woman in and of herself. I mean, that is what this legislation is trying to do across the country, is reduce women to simply earthly vessels for the proliferation of that family's biology. And if they want to have a say about it, tough luck.
Tough luck. Quite a business, though, for rape. You can enrich your entire family. It'd be a big family, and they all can sue.
The rape industrial complex. What a lovely country that we live in.
Absolutely. It's absolutely. It's absolute lunacy. But we're going to get a lot of this, folks. A lot of this, and it's going to, like I say, it's going to be ugly. All right, we're going to take. I should just say today's program. Brought to you by my favorite sponsor, SunsetLakeCBD.com. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Left is best will get you 20% off of any of their products, like Where I Owe My Sleep To. That is their CBD tincture, 6,000 milligrams now, and they have it in three flavors, citrus, natural, and mint. There's also they don't market it as this. They market it as a muscle relaxant, the CBD Salve with Arnica. But for me, of course, I use it for my eczema. Dorsey was talking about using it as his beard oil. They should definitely come out with a specific beard oil that is with CBD, frankly. I like the smell of it. But they have smokables, they have pre-rolls, they have coffee and fudge and great gummies, a great product. You can go to their website, see the third-party testing of all of their products. They work with the University of Vermont on regenerative farming practices. They use integrated pest management, so no pesticides, organic. They a fertilizer. They have great business practices, and they are movement partners. So check them out, SunsetLakeCBD.com. You get 20% off with Left is Best. Great product, folks. You got to check them out. And really couldn't be more pleased with them as a sponsor. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we do, we will bring Alex Perrine onto the program of the AP. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, Majority Report, joining us, the host of the Politics of Everything and the contributing editor of the New Republic and the proprietor of the AP. It's Alex Perrine. That AP is a Substack version.
And you know, the wearer of a cool hat today is what we'd like to, I'd like to point out here. Yes.
Alex, have you contemplated suing the other AP for stealing your name in that way, trying to brand themselves?
Well, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not a fan of ambulance chasing lawyers. You know, I believe in free speech and debate, and I think debate would actually be the best way to resolve this. This debate over what my newsletter is named, which is my initials, A-N-P.
Hmm. We'll get more into this because the New York Times is really they had a big opinion piece on free speech today, and there was another thing that was making the rounds about people going to college and finding out that there are other people who don't like their views, or other people who are writing in major publications about how they're afraid to write about what they're writing in major publications. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, people should not be made to feel uncomfortable about anything. That
if
they're making if they have access to a massive platform, but a communications platform. But before we get there, let's talk about what's going on with Ukraine and COVID come together. I got two Nancy Pelosi clips that we should play. We'll play the first one first. Because last week the House and Senate, and I don't know if the president signed off on it. I think he already has a $1.5 trillion bill to fund the government. And not included in that is $15 billion, 1% of funding to support COVID relief, to support. And we're not talking about things like, you know, keep people at home so that they get unemployment. We're talking about things like paying for vaccinations, paying mm-hmm. for antivirals, contact tracing, data keeping. I mean, the amount of things that's going to run out in the next couple of days, we'll talk about that, is extraordinary. And apparently Nancy Pelosi.
Congratulations, Alex, on your nuptials.
I buried the lead. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to talk about it. Here she is yesterday in a press conference. Excuse me.
I just want to dig into that a little bit more on the COVID relief.
This is your third time.
My third time, what, ask about COVID relief?
Yeah.
Well, it's substantive. You like substantive questions, so I just want to make sure.
Yeah, while people are dying in the Ukraine and all of that, yeah.
People are dying from COVID, too. Do you plan to offset it? How do you?
Yeah, we have to offset it.
You do have to offset it.
We have to offset it, and that's what we'll have to go to. And I would hope that the sensitivities of those to any offset would be the equity would be weighed as to what we need to do to save lives and livelihood and prevent the creation of a new variant. Yeah, it would be offset.
You said you're disappointed. I mean,
yeah,
what is your
message? We don't have it right now. We have everything else right now that we don't have it right now.
What is your message to those colleagues who nitpick kind of over that?
I've communicated my message to them. Yes, ma'am.
So there it is. I mean, you know, the idea that she wants to avoid talking about COVID because there's deaths in Ukraine, which is, nice try.
It's a very glib press conference line. I have been so, it's hard to describe myself as disillusioned because I've been disillusioned for most of my adult life, but like the congressional like process is just so deeply broken that I can't even follow this in the TikTok way I used to. And so I just get the impression that, if you are just like, there's no defense for how we cannot accomplish very obvious, necessary things, you're just going to get upset when people question you on it. And I think that's a pretty understandable response from the speaker there.
Well, here is the thing that and the dynamic is this, right? There's a $15 billion need for COVID programs, I guess is the best way to call it. The Republicans are insisting that they are paid for, that and they're insisting that they're paid for from monies that have yet to be spent in certain jurisdictions around the country. And so obviously the Congress people from those areas, those states, are like, wait, you can't pull that money back. And it's also money that we shouldn't pull back. It's money that we should have in reserve for these different things. But if you can't get it passed, then I can see that she would be frustrated. But the idea that the words Republicans don't come out of her mouth, the idea that there's not an opportunity to say, I mean, this is from Ed Young in The Atlantic. Next week, the government will have to cut shipments of the monoclonal antibody treatments by a third. In April, it will no longer be able to reimburse healthcare providers for testing, vaccinating, or treating millions of uninsured Americans who are disproportionately likely to be unvaccinated and infected. In June, it won't be able to support domestic testing manufacturers, can't buy extra doses of antiviral pills or infection-preventing treatments that immunocompromised people are banking on. They need to scale back efforts to improve vaccination rates in poor countries, which we have already. And all these things that I'm listing, we're not even doing it well with the funding. Never mind where it's going to be. But what's going to happen if this money doesn't go through is it's going to be, because eventually there's going to be another variant, it seems. Or let's put it this way. It's very possible there's going to be another variant. And it could be this BA variant. Maybe it's a different one. Maybe it never happens. And you've spent or you've allocated, 1% of the budget here. But to not like foresee this could be a problem in 6 months, and not to set the table, at least with the Republicans are intruding upon this, and they're going to pull back money from these districts and those districts. I mean, it just seems like there's no politics here. You can't say
it seems like a complete. Yeah, it seems like a complete breakdown. This is what's odd about it, is that it does seem like a breakdown of the kind of politics that Democrats traditionally have been much more comfortable doing, which is kitchen table stuff, and not demonizing Republicans, but the sort of thing where you just say, my good friends on the other side are holding this up, this is the terrain that traditionally they have felt very comfortable fighting in, and I genuinely don't understand why there is so much unwilling to acknowledge this is a political crisis. I don't know. Honestly baffling.
I think the answer is in her first response, which is that the Democrats have decided like this is the war in Ukraine, the invasion by the Russians, is the single most important, like it's the way they can avoid all of it.
Yeah. So they can get out of having to stake out positions on literally everything.
And this is the second time that they've tried to use Russia's, actions as a way to get out of talking about uncomfortable topics about their party. I mean, Hillary Clinton's loss, and now, this was clearly Biden's pivot at the State of the Union as well. We're dropping the mask mandate. We're moving past COVID. And now, he spent a good chunk of that time, understandably, on Ukraine. But I think they're like must be getting a bunch of overwhelming numbers saying people want to be done with COVID. They like this response. They're anti-Putin. Same numbers Republicans are getting, which is why they changed their rhetoric a bit, like after Trump was coming out and being more positive about Putin's invasion. But I don't understand what it is about Russia that makes them feel like, yeah, this is our get out of jail free card.
You say like I'm sure they are looking at polls and internal polling. They do it constantly and they are always looking at it. But what has been striking to me for several years now is that I think a lot of them, even faced with polling knowledge that things Democrats want and like are popular, and faced with the fact that Americans, by and large, are not particularly interventionist right now, they have still rather often gone to these national security and foreign policy lanes. And I think because they're more comfortable in them, and it's still like this 9/11 hangover, which is very bizarre. So I don't actually think they're following popular sentiment necessarily, even though I think Americans do think the war in Ukraine is important and should be focused on.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think it's more of a question of they know these popular things are out there, but they can't get them. They have failed in their attempt to deliver. So the best thing to do is to distract with something that has some sense of like neutrality.
Rally around the flag.
Or gravitas.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is like sort of some version of like, you know, four corners. You know, we're just going to run out the clock here and just hope nothing else happens. And maybe things will stabilize, you know, come the fall. That seems to be the attitude. And then, but the only thing I can tell you is if they're not aware that, if they're not seeing polling that this is like that they should be all about. And again, this is not to minimize what's going on in Ukraine at all. I mean, it's horrible. The reporter had a good point though. Like, you know, COVID's also taking a lot of lives, you know, here and abroad. What's happening in Ukraine is horrible. And, but it's not like they can't, you know, we have to stop the government from functioning.
We have a much like broader latitude just because of the screwed up way our entire system works. We have a much, much, much broader latitude for unilateral action by the government, by the administration to address what's ever going on in Ukraine, militarily, diplomatically, even economically. The White House has the ability, the power to unilaterally address that much more than it does to just spend money on antivirals for Americans, which is screwed up. But because like one way of exercising power is just easier, they would prefer to have the conversation on those terms.
And also to be clear, I don't know what Nancy Pelosi can do about any of this. In terms of Ukraine or Russia. Like, I don't know what the Congress can do outside of, like, good things. Let's put it that way. I mean,
but they can, you know, try to spark World War III by reading a cringy poem, right? I mean, that could be something.
Well, this is the more distressing part. Like, one has to wonder what's going on here. This is, this again was the, Friends of Ireland luncheon. And we should also say, just since we played that clip of Pelosi refusing, you know, or trying to avoid talking about COVID, and COVID funding, the prime minister of Ireland couldn't attend because he had COVID, right? Is that basically?
Yeah, didn't he go and then like hurriedly leave when
he found out? But here she is at the annual Friends of Ireland luncheon, and
she saw that video of Annalyn McCord writing that poem for Putin and saying, "If I was your mother, the war would be over," or something to that effect. And she thought that was so moving.
This is tough.
I got this message this morning from Bono. Bono has been a very Irish part of our lives.
Wait. Bono has been a very Irish part of our lives, as I always
say. Take that fact check.
Like, even like, what? Can't there be like, can't we get like a, you know, Speaker of the House spokesperson? Like, does she really need to be doing these things?
Right. This is. I find this genuinely fascinating because if assuming what she said is true, did Bono text Nancy Pelosi a poem out of the blue for no reason?
He sent it to her. He sent it to her hand delivered on a rainbow from an elf. Yeah, go on.
Joe Biden's Irish. Pelosi's, like me, is an Italian. I don't know why Bono is texting her poems and not Uncle Joe.
Because she has an Irish deficit that is filled by Bono, who has been a very big part of Irishness in her life.
Yes.
I'm
sorry, just one more thing. It's like reading a poem from like a black artist and being like, blank has been a very African part of my life or something like that. It's just ridiculous.
Got this message this morning from Bono. Whether we're in Ireland or here, whatever it is, Bono has been a very Irish part of our lives. And he said this. He said, "Oh, St. Patrick, he drove out the snakes with his prayers, but that's not all it takes. For the smoke symbolizes an evil that arises and hides in your heart as it breaks. And the evil from the darkness that lives in some men, but in sorrow and fear, that's when saints can appear. To drive out those old snakes once again. And they struggle for us to be free from the psycho in this human family. Ireland's sorrow and pain is now the Ukraine, and St. Patrick's name is now Zelensky."
And the response, too, was also just sort of weird. Like, look at that. He was able to put Zelensky into the St. Patrick's poem.
Yeah, like, Zelensky's a pun. I mean, it's literally a limerick. That's the form. The meter's not great, but it's literally a limerick. And Zelensky is the punchline. And Russia are the British? it's literally a British Britain out of Ireland analogy, I think. So I don't know. I just wonder how our allies in London feel about that.
Good point.
Yeah, the way she looked at the end, it was like, you know, when you're in first grade and they do apples and bananas and they get to eeples and beninis. Wow. Yeah. You can do that.
It is like a kid who just told a knock-knock joke and got the punchline right. You see?
Yeah.
Saint Zelensky!
Boy, it's really... I don't know how to respond to it. I mean, it's such a bizarre time.
Between this and the kente cloth kneeling and the Hamilton cast on January 6th, sounds like a stupid story, but this is everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party.
We're just kind of making fun of this, and it's really, really easy to dunk on this as liberal cringe, right? And to just be like, oh, look at all this terrible liberal cringe stuff they do. But like, they do this in lieu of actually solving problems.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally
the problem.
They do this in lieu of solving problems.
That's the problem. Were this part of an announcement that, you know, I don't know what it was. It would have been like, ugh, but, you know, the main point of this is that. But the problem is that they do this, and I think they do it. I don't think it's a coincidence. I do think that there is this sense by the leadership that we can fool people by thinking that we're doing something.
It's condescending.
It's incredibly condescending.
But you know what I think? I think it's also a reflection of a leadership that is in a media bubble as well, too, though, right? Yeah. Because I do actually think that the sort of people who use the word Twitter to mean left-wing critics and say Twitter is not real life spend their lives on Twitter in a bubble of people who praise them for their leadership and how good they are at accomplishing things. I think you can see that dynamic all over the Democratic Party.
And I think, too, the what we're seeing in terms of the leadership of the Democratic Party, and you know, I know this is, you know, some people are going to play like this is, you know, not substantive stuff, but it's about doing the politics.
Yeah,
I think that not only are they in a bubble, they're in a bubble in terms of understanding how things are communicated in today's society. I really do think this is, you know, I mean, it's partly a generational thing. It can be overcome, but it is like, I don't think they understand, like, you know, I don't think they understand that people experience this stuff in a way that they didn't experience it 25 years ago because of social media. And people are, you know, memes, you cannot control the memes, you know, like, you know, the idea that, like, you know, that this might have been reported in the New York Times, you know, had she done this, like, you know, 30 years ago, it would have reached the narrow subset of people where there may have had some value. But the problem is this goes out and becomes fodder for narratives about the Democratic Party. And people are aware of what's not being done. I think there's a tin ear is too narrow, too small of a term here, because it's not just a tin ear. It's almost as if they don't have ears and that they're not aware of, like,
well, right. And I mean, I think it does actually, again, like, we're talking about a really, really insignificant thing in the broader scheme. But if you don't understand why so many people would find it inherently ridiculous to say, like, I received a poem from Bono this morning, that there's a tiny, tiny, tiny subset of people who are going to hear that and be impressed or interested, right? And then want to hear the poem. I do think it's like, again, it's really, it's too easy to mock this sort of Hamilton worship stuff. But it is this sort of liberal bubble that they live in, that they frequently accuse everyone else of being in.
Yes. And I'm not sure it doesn't also have to do with just how wealthy she is, frankly.
Yeah, no, I mean, the wealth is a huge part of it. Like, it's a very
a
elite
huge part of
yeah.
it. I mean, the idea of, like, you know.
With that said, though, Sam, thank you so much for being a very Jewish part of our lives.
You're welcome.
Sam, as always, traditionally in the Lower East Side or anywhere else, Sam has always been a traditionally Jewish yes. part of our lives.
Can you imagine? Like, I'm Irish. I live in Ireland. And Bono has always been a very big Irish part of my life. Like, what? Just insane jibber jabber. It's just like, no. Meanwhile, like, this is also sort of shocking to me. Maybe they're talking about it and we just can't hear it. And this is also part of the problem with like doing this type of messaging, is that it drowns out other things. But that we, you know, we played a clip of what's going on in Idaho. Same thing's going on in Tennessee. We've seen in Texas this past week, it's over. Like, the whole Texas law that is going to, there's two parts to it, essentially. One, it makes it almost impossible to get an abortion in Texas. I mean, people have worked around it, but this is just like phase one of that impossibility, because next stop is you can't go out of state to get an abortion. Next stop is you can't get it through the mail. Anybody finds out about it. But this creation of the citizens vigilante force, essentially, armed with lawsuits, is going to stand. We're like, the idea that the Democrats aren't out there right now saying this is about the fall, because when you have a Supreme Court, you know, we need to, this is about the courts. This is about maintaining majorities. It's just astonishing to me.
I mean, look, I have been wondering what to make of this for since the, you know, Dr. Seuss cancellation thing a while back, but like Democrats have so thoroughly decided that anything they can construe as being about the culture war is a loser for them to talk about, that they are abdicating any responsibility to actually fight, to make these, to fight this stuff in public. And then I'm not saying Democrats at the state level, because they're doing their best in these places, I think. But I think that they have entirely abdicated the fight nationally and are not making a sort of national narrative out of what's happening at the state level in all these places. And I will acknowledge the Biden White House put out one very good statement about the Texas trans kids, the horrible law there. But obviously they're not making speeches about it. They're not going on TV to talk about it. I mean, they're just not.
The theme should be, you know, instead of the idea that the dominant narrative right now in terms of the culture war is Democrats have gone too far because they're grooming our kids to be gay and transgender, which is the dominant narrative right now, right? They have moved on from CRT, and you can see this, the dominant narrative is this like sort of like broad-based, they're coming for our kids. CRT also is like associated from they're coming for our kids. The gays grooming and the transgender grooming, they're coming for our kids. This is what they're focused on. And it all funnels into it. And the idea that the Democrats can't come out and point to a law that is being promoted in multiple states by Republican legislatures about that would allow rapists' family to sue women who have been raped from getting an abortion. The idea that Democrats aren't taking this, they're not taking the idea that like they're coming, they're going after, they're not allowing gay people to acknowledge that they're gay if they're associated with a school in some way. The idea that you can't come out and start saying like, this is what happens with Republicans when they get majorities in legislatures. Yeah. They go too far. You know, like that's the all you
need. That's a really simple message. That's a really simple message. And you know what? You know what? I will say this too. Like I think that Joe Biden is the absolute perfect avatar to wage the culture war issues on the side of good, because no one is going to mistake that man for being young and woke in any way. And instead of using that unique power that he has to make him the face of defending people against Republican majorities, defending these minority groups against Republican majorities, they are choosing instead to say that's not the kind of thing the president gets involved with or talks about. But he could be on TV all the time, like actually saying what happens when these Republicans get in power in your state is they whip up these frenzies about teaching about slavery in schools and all this other stuff. And he can crack an Irish joke about how much they love drinking. And then he can be like that like they're going too far and they're telling you lies. He is the perfect voice for that message. I genuinely think he should like be out there spreading it much more than a lot of the other sort of kitchen table quote unquote stuff they want to talk about.
And the entire Democratic leadership should be echoing the same thing so that there is a singular narrative. I mean, look, Josh Hawley sort of tipped the hand as to how they're going to go after Ketanji Jackson Brown. And that is that when she was on the sentencing committee, Democratic and Republican committee, and they all voted these ways, that she was too lenient on sex offenders. I mean, like, it is so clear what they're doing. It is, you know, they talk about panic. It's attacks on schools. I mean, it is all, this is what they have settled on. They're coming for your kids and they're going to teach them to be, you know, only see race and be groomed by gay people and be groomed by transgender people. And they're also going to allow you to be like, throw you over to the pedophiles. And I mean, this is the,
well, Sam, you know what I think part of it is? I do think, like, for our, for especially for Washington lifers, I think it's a really sincere belief that social progress is a ratchet that only goes in one direction. And I don't think they see how much of a backlash period we're in right now, right? Like, I think they see this as an aberration or just like a weird thing that's happening. And I don't think they get that we're in a genuinely frightening backlash period of reactionary, racist, anti-LGBT mood right now, being driven by a minority, but a minority with too much power.
But that's the point, right? It is a minority. So, like, when we talk about how they're not seizing on this nationally, I mean, I don't know what the polling is on this, but it's got to be, and again, there are limits to this, but this should be a layup for everybody in leadership. I mean, abortion rights are popular. Gay rights at this point in this country are popular. Maybe they're afraid of being ahead of the country on trans rights. I mean, that's pathetic, but that would be in keeping with the Democratic Party. But I don't understand how you don't capitalize this on, as you both capitalize on this, as you both were saying, just based on the raw numbers of how people feel about this.
They're blocking the COVID relief, and you go out there, Republicans have gone too far. You give them a little bit of power. I mean, we all want to keep our masks off. We all want to, but we can only do that if we have contact tracing, if we can get you the monoclonal antibodies. I mean, this is all, it seems to me, to be just sort of like, this is low-hanging fruit, and they just will not go on the offensive. And it's really, man, I'll tell you something. If I had a button that could put us like 7 years from now or 8 years from now, so that like this generation of Democratic leadership is gone.
Onto a farm.
What's that?
To a farm upstate.
Yeah, exactly. I would press it in a heartbeat. And it would cost me my 8 years too. I want these 8 years, but I'm not going to lie. You know, that's part of the deal.
And what's infuriating to me is that they don't seem to, like, Republicans understand that they can push the media coverage just by repeating something. And that, like,
you're totally right.
But Democrats don't really do that. They don't really force the media's hand to take their position seriously in any way. They kind of they're just more ambivalent about it. And I don't understand that strategy in and of itself either.
I mean, the Republicans have an unfair advantage in that they have a massively influential, much more well-funded media arm than the left does. And so they are sort of playing on easy mode in that respect. If they decide today we are mad about CRT, and we will decide CRT can mean anything we want it to mean, they have TV stations that will just decide that's today's story. Democrats don't have that. But what they're not willing to do is I think what you are saying is just make their own argument, get on the TV that's available to them and make their own argument that is clear and direct, instead of, I think, trying to play the refs in a way, trying to say, stop repeating these dumb things Republicans say. But, you know, I mean, and then you end up with, I mean, I think the example of what happened in the Virginia elections is the clearest example of this media and messaging dynamic, where it became quickly accepted that Democrats lost because of actions they took, namely closing schools and masking in schools, and I guess teaching CRT. So that was the message that Democrats themselves spread. It was actions we took that caused this. And you look at the polling, and it was a surge of elderly voters who do not have school-aged children, a surge of elderly voters who were mad about lies they were told about how race was being taught in schools. How do you counteract that? Not through your actions. You got to figure out a different way to counteract that.
And I would also say, you know, one of the problems I think that was also massive in that Virginia race that goes completely obscured. Youngkin was a Bain Capital guy, I think it was, right? Was it Bain or Carlyle? Mm-hmm. One of those two. He was like
both candidates were from the same.
Well, this is the problem.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This is the problem. This is the problem. Is that this is completely obscured by all the other issues. Is that sometimes when you lose an election, it is because you do not have the arrows in your quiver that you need to respond. Yeah. And,
yeah.
You know, Newt Gingrich and Barack Obama showed us the value of going after predatory capitalists. And, yeah, you know,
absolutely.
This is low hanging fruit stuff. But when you are the exact same thing as that, Terry McAuliffe is, you cannot do that. And you are inhibited from going after, you know, you are inhibited from deploying essentially all the assets that one typically has in a race like that. And you don't have it because you're one of those people too. So then you have to fight on their ground and you can't counterattack. You cannot. It's a real problem.
I think we have a ton of evidence that one of the clearest effects of this gerontocratic leadership problem is candidate selection and just not even recognizing the pattern of like which candidates tend to be successful, not in terms of ideology, but just in terms of like, oh, people don't want a finance executive who was last elected in 2004 or something, right? Like they actually might want someone who is sort of new and interesting.
What's also their lack of awareness that, you know, finance is a liability or could be, or well, yeah, inhibiting,
I
mean, liability.
I think it's a willful refusal, right? Like it's a willful denial. Yeah. Because yep. everyone knows that.
Well, it's like Nancy Pelosi getting out there going, this is the free market. We can talk
about an easy layup, right? Like the easiest layup in the world. Lawmakers, insider trading, easiest layup in the world. And her first instinct is like, no, don't think so. I mean, that's not poll tested moderation.
No,
that's pure ideology.
You made a point too about the right wing media, and I also say that I think we also need to acknowledge there is an audience. There is a more like a sort of engaged and vibrant audience for this type of stuff. I mean, it is like, you know, like this is something that I was quite clear on when I was on talk radio, which is that the right in this country have what I would call a Masada complex. They're constantly feeling like they're under siege. It is very easy to make them feel that way. It's the nature of the conservative reactionary mind is this feeling of new ideas, which are always coming because time moves forward to a certain extent, are necessarily feeling like they're a threat. And how they defend against any type of progress, any type of message that reinforces the notion of stopping progress because it means loss of something for them, loss of privilege or loss of, you know, perceived status or whatever it is has an audience. And, you know, we started off by talking about the free speech question. And, you know, it exists amongst you see the New York Times catering to it. You see it in the Substack. I mean, for instance, like there's this, the largest study, it's peer reviews of the use of ivermectin.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the right wingers, you know, pushing ivermectin because Trump did. I don't know who invested in what, and I don't even know what that was, why that was there. It was just like
the
idea that like there was some conspiracy out there that it was. I'm not even clear on what it furthered, but it became embraced as a way of showing that
tribal loyalty, basically.
but it was used. Opportunist picked up on it.
Yeah.
As a way of showing that, like, this suppression of, like, conspiracies coming out of, like, weird corners, or the notion that we should listen to any type of experts in the most obvious, like, listen to the experts scenario, which is a pandemic, it seems to me. And there's so many people who are crying about the idea that the suppression of, like, you know, IDW types, contrarian types, the suppression of ivermectin and this and that, like this is an example of big tech silencing and whatnot. I mean, one would imagine that they're all on the ivermectin beat and they would be digging into this study that was printed in the Wall Street Journal of all places. They did a write-up of it. I saw, I'm sure that's in other places too. And I am convinced we'll hear none of it.
No. I mean,
if the idea is like, we need to examine ivermectin, then go to it. I want to see the next 6 months talking about this study. It's the largest one.
Right. I mean, the debate is its own justification, right? So it can't ever end. I think that's one thing animating all of this too. It's like, you can't actually settle a question, right? Everything has to remain eternally open. If you're, and now I'm talking sort of economic incentive, but like, if that's your bread and butter, everything has to remain eternally unsettled, and you have to remain eternally censored and besieged. You can't ever get to the part where you're like, I mean, you can just be done with something when it's no longer useful to you. But, you know, you wouldn't be done with it by being like, oh, this huge study came out and I was wrong.
Well, that's cancellation and suppression.
Yes, exactly.
And that's lack of free speech. Because you should be able to make an assertion and not have anybody question the assertion.
Yeah.
Even if it's complete. I mean,
As I said a few years ago, free speech is you have to invite me to your office to yell at you and call you a moron.
Yes, I saw that 2018 piece that you linked to. I saw that on your Twitter feed. That was pretty good. But this is, and it's not just that, it's like the other half of that economic incentive is the existence of an audience that is interested in that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And that phenomena, I think, is sort of like a little bit too understudied.
Yeah.
Not so much like, I mean, I understand why people who, like, if I get, if I get a 10,000 retweets on this tweet.
Well, yeah, like, look, I mean, yeah, I think it is understudied why. So, right. You look at, like, how the History Channel went from being a History Channel to showing ancient aliens, right? And then, like, it's like, because there was more of an audience for ancient aliens. And that's the understudied part, because aliens is not propagandistic in that political way, but it appeals to some part of people's brains. And I agree with you. Like, I'm interested to know why more people wanted that.
And it feels like the Republicans and the right has tapped into that sort of generic desire for conspiracy theories to explain things. I mean, it may be just like a simple question of like, this is the new religion, right? Like, how do I explain, how do I deal with the questions that modernity presents me? I can't. I'm overwhelmed. But this is something I can follow because, you know, like these conspiracies, they never have a dead end. Dead end is actually like, well, if you press against it right here, the third brick from the bottom, another secret door opens up and I get more information. And that seems to be like our politics now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, that's actually one of the more, that conspiracy minded sort of, person is consolidating on the right in a way that I don't think they did before. I think there were more of them on the right sort of usually because they've always enjoyed that kind of conspiratorial thinking. But, you know,
John
I think
Birch
like
society.
Yeah, exactly. Birch-style politics. But people who might have been, like, LaRoucheites before are probably Q people now, right? Like, that's what I think, actually. And, but I think that the additional thing that's happening is that the right, like, the institutional right is just embracing it. And that's the part where it's like, I mean, they don't, I don't think they really care where this ends, but they're happily, happily going to riot as far as it takes them.
All right. Listen, before, I know we're bumping up against it, but before we go, we have to talk about Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah.
We have to.
We do. Because if we don't talk about him, we're silencing him.
Exactly.
We're silencing a proud Italian American.
Well, we're actually, in many ways, silencing the entire family. Because Chris Cuomo, and it's almost like they coordinated this too, right? Like Cuomo comes out with his like, you need to pay me $150 million because you besmirched my journalistic credibility, which, yeah. Whoa. First off, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's amazing to me.
Well, they were always working together behind the scenes. Now they can be united in an anti-cancel culture public campaign.
Exactly. Yeah. Bringing the Cuomo family together.
It's heartwarming, honestly.
So Cuomo spent like, I don't have it here now. Where is that piece? He's got millions of dollars left in his campaign.
He's got a bunch of campaign money.
Yeah.
And so he just spent like dropped like $3 million or something on like a television campaign.
Yes.
To, oh, here it is. Yeah. I get it right in front of me. To, essentially, you know, just say like, I'm still here. I'm not dead yet. And yeah. This is $3 million on a blitz of television and digital ad campaigns aimed at clearing his name and celebrating his record during his decade as governor. There was an Emerson poll that just showed that Cuomo is trailing Governor Kathy Hochul by 4 percentage points. However, 63% of New Yorkers do not want Cuomo to run again for public office. This is all just fast. This is yeah. Really fascinating. That Cuomo is trying to do this comeback. Before we get to this video, though, what give me your sense of this. Like
I think he's a delusional person, so it's hard to get a read on what his plans are. If he wanted to run the Democratic primary, he would need to be gathering thousands of signatures starting yesterday if he wanted to run for his old job. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know what he actually wants to do, but he's cozying up to some of the weirdest and worst people in New York politics for whatever his next step is.
That's interesting. I mean, do you think what would that other step be if he's not thinking about actually running for governor again? Because what I'm really interested in is the notion of how much of his victory as governor came as, well, obviously the name Cuomo was a big deal when he first runs, and he was, you know, on a trajectory to come out of the Clinton administration. He had been AG in New York. How much was his reelection a function of like, if we don't support Cuomo, he's such a vindictive person that he will, you know, he'll make tens of thousands of people go homeless because he doesn't like our organization or, you know, like,
oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And how
yeah,
much of that yeah. thing is gone now?
That's yeah. I think a lot of that's gone. That's what ended him was a new crop of lawmakers in Albany who were like less scared of him. And then now these groups that depended on him, are not no longer depend on him at all. The worst thing that could have happened, and Governor Hochul is not my ideal candidate, but the worst thing that could have happened for him was that he was just replaced by someone basically competent. And then people were like, oh, like life went on. He was right. Not the essential man.
Right. Well, here is, you say that that was his problem. I will contend he has another problem that ended it. Apparently, this is, this was posted yesterday or today. He is posing for a photo. Is this up on the screen?
Yeah, I'll put this up now. This is by Emily Noah, New York One reporter.
He's posing for a photo, and apparently he has a cop who stands with him, tries to make sure that he doesn't, like do something inappropriate. Watch the cop's arm. He's holding a Cuomo, and he, like, first off, he's got his Like, first off, like, the cop has got his arm around Cuomo's arm to begin with. And then he grabs his hand as he can sense that Cuomo's like,
the hand's gonna
start going low. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. He starts really just holding his finger.
Oh, my God.
He's got to restrain him.
Yeah. It is unbelievable. And, like, what is Cuomo's hand? Like, you can see Cuomo's hand is just waiting there. He's not pulling his hand away. Well, it's just sort of floating there, right? Floating. And then the guy's like, I see what you're doing, Andrew. Come on, Andy.
Emily No of New York One says that before he posed for this photo, Andrew Cuomo made a joke about not wanting to hold a woman too closely. So that's why that cop was kept. He can't stop himself.
It's like after what happened to him, he cannot stop himself from saying things like that and thinking it's a cute joke. I don't know.
The cop literally like removes his hand from her rear end.
I saw someone tweeted something funny. Like, this is the first time I've ever seen a cop stop a crime.
God, this guy.
That was Nathan Bernhardt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really amazing. But
yes.
This is Cuomo's comeback attempt.
Right.
And these are the people.
These are the people who were leading us for years. For years, right. These were the people, the best and the brightest. These freaks, just freaks.
Alex Perrine, proprietor of the AP Substack. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
A pleasure as always.
All right, we'll see you soon.
See ya.
Folks, we got to take a quick break. And when we do, we will be welcoming back to the program Andy Kindler. Who brings so much Jewishness to our world. It's really great. We'll be right back in just a minute. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. And joining us, ladies and gentlemen, is the man who inspired thousands of comments, frankly, and probably a couple of jokes. And at the very least, this one theme song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Andy Kindler.
Yes.
.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song.
Andy Kindler. Yes.
Wow. That was a nice harmony. Yeah.
Well, I know how to belt it out. Let's not kid ourselves. I sung with Pete Seeger for many years in the 60s before I was in the Weavers.
Andy, will you?
Is anything I'm saying funny? I think I've now transitioned to unfunny vaudevillian style speech.
Oh, no. Don't even start. I mean, okay, how did you come on to the, when you came on to our ping here, our system that we're using for video, you said the first thing you said is like, you guys feel like a real family. And like, who are you in the family?
Oh, I'm like this. Well, I guess I'm the uncle who has his heart in the right place, but he just doesn't know enough about the issues.
Oh God!
You know, like he says that he goes, "Look, I like Karl. I liked Karl Marx too. But are you saying you're pro Stalin?
Pass
the socialist butter. I don't know what that meant.
Well, no, actually, yeah, that tracks, right?
It does
yeah,
track.
Butter. Yeah, that is the perfect.
That's what would happen if Putin was in. Wait a second. What's the argument now? The deep state wasn't in. If Putin wasn't being directed by the deep state,
Andy,
is unbelievable. I mean,
look at what you've been doing with your backdrop. It
I
is
know.
Really...
I'm so excited, and I started to launch into a whole shtick about it, and you, and then Sam goes, Jewy, you're not in the air yet, Jewy. Calm down. Who calls me Jewy? During yeah. the
I mean, you know, it's a term
allowed.
Of endearment. It's
I'm not allowed.
You
I'm
bring
not.
So
no.
much. You bring
no, you
so
are
much.
Emma, you are allowed.
You bring the Jewishness into our lives so much.
I put the ew in Jew.
What, Andy? Like those flowers look like they have died and dried up.
Well, they are dyed. That's my wife Susan and I. That's our specialty. I bought Susan those lovely flowers for Valentine's Day. They dried out, and then we invented this process.
Well, it looks like you're at a funeral
What
home.
Is the
like
process?
There's...
That's what we want.
Yeah.
I want. You know why? Emma, this yes. is the exact set I use for, you might not be getting all the Medicare that you need. I'm Andy Kindler, and I'm 65 years old. Have you listened to Bill Engvall, Sam? Bill Engvall.
No,
he's a comic He was a comic from the you know, like the redneck, not the redneck. You know, like the guys who toured around. The who are
blue
those guys?
Comedy.
Foxworthy.
Blue collar comedy guys.
Right, right. Well, he does those. I never listened to his act till now, because he's telling me I might not be getting all the Medicare I deserve.
Is that like Joe Namath ad spot too?
Joe Namath is one. Jimmy
Door?
Dynamite Walker.
Oh, I've seen that one. Yes, it was great to see him again.
And Joe Namath, he is relentless. Here's my favorite part. They go, you can call this year even if you called last year. That's sad. You guys don't care. Look at you. You don't think you'll ever reach this age.
Are you kidding? I was checking out AARP for discounts. Now I'm not retired.
I have two words for both of you: consumer cellular.
What is that?
It's old people phones. You know, when the numbers are the size of the phone. Do you want a phone where you just pick it up and someone takes over? Who are you calling?
Oh God, Andy.
Let's do.
We've
this,
got
right?
a lot to get to today.
Okay, so I'll keep my funny stuff to a minimum.
I did find the Bill Engvall Health Markets commercial if we wanted to take
oh,
it. Oh, let's see it. Let's see it.
Oh, my God.
If you have Medicare, listen up. The Medicare enrollment deadline is only weeks away.
What?
Using the right Medicare plan is no laughing matter. Pick the wrong one, and you might end up with a doctor you're not so comfortable with.
Ooh, I'm not so comfortable.
Oh, a little bit of racism.
Oh, that's crazy.
I didn't say that. Oh,
wait,
yes.
Pause it. Because that's perfect, like, from the demo they're going for. Due to cover. A little bit of light racism in the Medicare ad.
Is that like a Native American man with a tear? Who is that person?
Yeah, that was a, like, it looks like a sort of medicine lodge sort of pest.
Yeah, so, naturally, gratuitously inserting
it was done. It was done, tastefully, Emma, I think. Very tastefully.
If you say so.
Is only weeks away. Choosing the right Medicare plan is no laughing matter. Pick the wrong one and you might end up with a doctor you're not so comfortable with.
I'm not so comfortable.
or even worse, be forced to pay thousands in medical expenses due to coverage limitations. That'll be how much? Understanding all the options, let's face it, it can be downright confusing. And that's why I love Health Market, your insurance marketplace. They search thousands of plans from leading insurance companies to find a plan that's right for you. Plans that have prescription drug coverage, dental and vision care, and that offer extra benefits you may not even know are available. Some plans may eliminate your out-of-pocket costs. Like
what if I called last year, though? What if I called last year?
That's a Medicare Advantage program. It's like we have a sort of like a private health insurer's add-on to Medicare. That
George W. Bush, come on, say what you want about him. He immorally invaded Iraq, and he tried to make Social Security privatized. Come on, right? Who's with me on it?
Hey man, you might not be getting the Medicare you want.
People might not be understanding all the sarcasm I am putting out there.
So, have you been approached?
Oh no, I don't think so. I would have to have been. I'm not Jimmy Kid Dynamite Walker. I'm not. Who else?
But is that guy? I guess that guy was big in the blue collar comedy tour. I guess that dude. I don't know.
Well, he wasn't huge in it, but people will go. I think he goes, and then Pamela will go. I think we saw him, honey, in the thing. All right, sign up. I don't know what it is.
he's probably the fourth, right? Because Larry the Cable Guy and Foxworthy were probably the biggest ones, and then the Ron White Tater Salad guy was probably third. And I think Hangwell was probably fourth.
I used to love when Jeff Foxworthy would do the buffet. He would go, what was that buffet he would do? Come on down to the buffet. It's open all day, and it has sriracha sauce. Come on, what's the name of that buffet in the South that's open all the time?
The Golden Corral.
Golden Corral! Come on down.
Etho G. Panhandle says, Jennifer Lawrence got her start on Bill Engvall's TBS sitcom. He's a huge Trump guy now and spends most of his time tweeting made-up stuff about Antifa.
Mm.
Oh, I swear to God, I did not see coming. I'm not being silly. I thought he'd be one of those people who stayed out of it. He's Rob Schneidering it.
You can't stay out of it, or Antifa wins.
It's unbelievable. This Antifa, kudos to them. I never see them. I have never spoken to them directly, but they're at every event. Kudos
that you know of.
Look, I was briefly in the Proud Boys. I was just about to go. I was proudly in the Brief Boys. You remember when I was in the Brief Boys? You know, say what you want about Gavin McInnes. Funny guy, right, Sam?
Oh, yeah.
funny guy.
So funny.
Emma, have you had to be in the same room with a Gavin McInnes?
Again, not that I know of or that I can say as a card-carrying member of Antifa.
Oh, you really are. You told me in the break. You said don't even bring it up.
Yeah,
because
you're really getting
you are 2 seconds away from being...
Yep.
Here's where they start the Antifa meetings. Hi, everybody here. All right. Okay, Sam Cedar.
Andy, have you been touring?
I'm not going anywhere. In fact, not am I not going anywhere. I'm booked. Oh, by the way, can I do my haircut joke?
Yeah.
My pandemic haircut joke. If you don't like my haircut, wait 10 minutes because my wife cuts it every 10 minutes. So goodbye hair salons. Hello, 40-hour processes with protractors, with a protractor.
Do you want to watch something that's a little bit sad? Let's watch this thing with Dave Rubin. All right.
Now, Andy,
we're not going to do his comedy thing. I want to save that.
I want to say whatever you have to show me, I know is going to brighten my day in a sarcastic way.
What should we do? What do you guys think? Because I sort of want to.
I kind of think we should do the attempt at comedy, but I mean, we could also play this thing about.
All right, let's do the attempt at comedy. We have to do this. It's just too
good. He's very funny, Gabriel. He was a comic at one point.
Well, there's a sense that Ruben, that something happened over the past a couple of weeks or something, where you get the sense that somebody said to Dave, or maybe Dave just had this out, like, I got to get back to my roots. And for Dave Rubin, his roots were in comedy, and more specifically, unfunny comedy.
Observational, unfunny observational comedy.
Well, but here he is branching out because he's been like, this is working for Crowder.
Right. He's the only guy doing this in this space, so he could work for Dave. He's got the chops.
Does he say about soy? Me? Does he say soy at some point?
Here is Dave Rubin cutting himself into The View.
This is the cold open of his show, by the way.
Oh, he did some kind of a thing.
The fact that we're giving her oxygen is what makes her relevant, that we're talking about her on Hot Topics. But on the other hand, how do you not call out something that is repeating false Russian propaganda that has been brought down?
They used to arrest people for doing stuff like this. If they thought you were colluding with a Russian agent, if they thought you were putting out information or taking information and handing over to Russia, they used to actually investigate stuff like this. And I guess now, you know, there seems to be no bars.
What are you two crazy bitches talking about? Jesus. What are you talking about? You want to arrest people who are different than you politically? Tulsi Gabbard? She's a member of our military. She's a former congresswoman, a Democrat. You just don't like her, so you want to arrest her? You want to arrest Tucker Carlson, the very dapper Tucker Carlson. What are you saying? You guys are nuts. You're just nuts. I only agreed to do this show because I thought that Whoopi was sane. She was good. Sister Act 2. Anna's just nuts. I don't even know what she's doing here. The other one's a racist. There's the drunk one. What are we all doing here? You people are everything that you've come to hate. You know that?
The most perplexing.
Is that Dave Rubin?
Yes.
You get out of here.
Who do you think it is? Who do you think it could be?
Some kind of a cyber, unfunny cyber presence that you can tap into.
Our folks could not see Andy's face during while we were playing the clip, but I'm going to do my impression of Andy during that clip.
His sense of timing is great. He has Whoopi go on for about 5 minutes, right? Who's going to stay around to the button in that bit?
But you got the joke, though.
I don't. Is it that she's... Oh, it's like another lady? Is this like another lady you wish you would see on The View?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, you stupid...
But
first
what's
all,
funny about a vision of funny. The lady you want to see on The View?
Is that what they're saying? That
what's weird, what's crazy is like he's being another lady on The View, right?
Right.
But he's not ratcheting up what he's trying to parody is that The View is being unhinged and
right. He's saying
just being himself in a wig with lipstick.
He's saying the quiet part out loud in a sketch. That's really, come on. He has to have been, is he done now? Is this from his pirate studio? He's done, right?
Look, he takes a victory lap if you want to see a comedian sort of comment on his own craft.
Okay.
Before we get to this, because that part's amazing. But I honestly believe that I could do now an entire podcast series just bringing on comedians to watch that and assess it. Like, it is so mystifying how someone who's ostensibly considered himself a comedian for so long does something like this, and there doesn't even seem to be an attempted joke. And the best part is to get like, look at you, you're the drunk one.
Who is the drunk one? That's not even a slam.
But it's also sort of like...
I'd be drunk if I was on The View every day.
Isn't his character drunk? I mean, what? Or is this
character just talk like this and that. Like,
no,
what?
It's just like misogynistic, maybe.
It's
like,
really, yeah. It's like, first of all, it's obvious that he hates women, yeah. Right? Because you don't make yourself look like that as a woman unless you hate them in a deep level.
Who knows?
So he hates women. He hates liberals. And so, well, maybe we should have people dress up in their long hair and we should comment on the thing. What is this about? Is the bit about him putting down the view?
Yeah. Like, the closest thing to a joke is how low he has the wig sit on his forehead. Like, yeah. As if he doesn't know how to put on a wig. Like,
you mean like it's a Benny Hill style humor? Is that what you mean? More broad humor? He was never, but the thing is, he says he was a comedian, but what is that? He says he just did it a couple of times. He never worked as a comedian. He never worked at a Jimmy Dore level. You know what I'm talking about? Where are you? Who's with me on this now? Okay, thank you.
Let's see how proud he is of himself, though. This is the cold open, and then when it comes on, he's really.
Okay, that's better.
Hello there. I'm Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report direct message on today, March 15th, 2022. We are live streaming on Rumble, YouTube, and Blaze TV, although after that, we may not be live streaming on YouTube much longer.
Why? Yes, because incredible. It's bad?
Yeah.
Is he? YouTube now has quality control filters.
And I'm so he's afraid dangerous.
He's going to get pumped up in that. I got to be honest. I don't even think I think it's possible that Rumble would even take that down.
See, now is Rumble like Instagram, but more revved up?
No, Rumble is the we don't censor anybody, although we actually do censor some people if it goes too far on.
Yeah, well, we're not crazy.
Right. We don't have enough advertisers to complain quite yet. So we're still keeping your stuff up, but I could see Rumble taking that down just because
I like direct message. That's a very clever segment though, right, Sam? You guys both admit it's direct message. It's a takeoff on social networking.
He's so excited after the clip that he can't contain himself. He's just like, wow, we crossed the line there.
Who follows him? I mean, Joe Rogan's awful. We don't know why anybody would watch him, but I guess, no, Joe Rogan's really not much better than him. Oh, I guess Joe Rogan has more shtick. And
no, Joe Rogan, I think, is better. I don't know.
Rogan's more charismatic than Dave.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
I mean, Joe Rogan is smarter than Dave. I mean, which is not necessarily a high bar, but I mean, come on.
He is smarter than Dave. And let's go back with who else is smarter than Dave Rogan.
I mean, Rogan recognized that, too. That's why he basically shunned Dave from being on his show.
Yeah. I don't even know that, but I didn't know where they were. So what? So he still has Alex Jones come on though, or no more Alex Jones?
But let Ruben sort of wrap this up because it's tough to make such a hard segue for something so funny into getting serious.
He's cracking up, Sam. He's cracking up because it was so goddamn funny.
Streaming on Rumble, YouTube, and Blaze TV. Although after that, we may not be live streaming on YouTube much longer. Yes, that was incredible. Unearthed, unedited. Secret footage from The View yesterday. Geez. That was guest host Darlene Rudin, who was laying down the truth with those lunatics. That's what we're doing around here. That's what we discussed doing around here at 8 a.m. in the morning. Don't ask how we got the wig.
Michael, would you fire? Would you fire your producers?
That type of thing.
Does he have writers? He doesn't have a writer who writes that, does he?
That's when I played this.
Going to get the wig.
Everybody. That's exactly what anybody who's involved in comedy says after that. He doesn't have writers, right?
Right.
I mean, nobody. I mean, Gutfeld. Wrote that.
I mean, this is not professional, like a Gutfeld rant.
Wow.
I hate Gutfeld so much, but I have nothing to say except I hate him.
All right. So we just crapped on Ruben. Let's be sympathetic towards him.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
We should.
One of the things that I've been saying for a long time about Dave Rubin is he was going to run into a problem with his audience on the Glenn Beck show, because at one point, the Glenn Beck audience was going to realize that that Dave is married to a man.
A man.
And that is completely antithetical to everything they want. But Dave is convinced that the right is far more forgiving and accepting.
Yeah.
Even though he sits down with like Dennis Prager, and Prager basically says, please don't be gay. And Ben Shapiro says, please don't be gay, more or less. Like, you know, more like, I wouldn't have dinner with you. Please, please.
He's a wonderful group of people.
great guys. And it's quite possible that moment for Dave has arrived. And when Matt told me this, that Dave was expecting a child because he and his husband are having a surrogate, my first response was like, "Damn, it's sort of sweet, A, but B, also great, because I can't wait for him to gain all this weight and have no time to do any prep." And then I realized, like, he's not doing any prep anyways. But it's going to be fun. I always like it when other YouTubers end up having kids, because it's like, good luck, buddy.
I always like to try and imagine what his husband is like. How could you? Like, but I always imagine that it's a normal person who's married to a monster. But so they're not normal.
Yeah, a little background on that. So his partner is the one who wanted to have the children. They're doing two surrogacies. They both donated sperm to two different surrogates, and his husband convinced him, basically saying, Dave said, like, I'm just so focused on my career, I never even thought about it. But too busy focused on writing jokes. But his partner wanted this, and so we have a compilation here. The first thing is from a PragerU video where Dave talks about how it's conservatives that are so open-minded.
Who did this compilation?
And this was Kim Possible Lies that put this compilation together on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And also put some Kishi Bashi music underneath it, which is really funny. We're going to have to mute that. So if you want the full thing, it's Kim Possible Lies on Twitter.
Go talk to some. They do exist, and they do things like watch movies, travel, and eat ethnic food. You know, regular people things. You know what I found out? The right, much more than the left, believes in the notion of live and let live. Ladies and gentlemen, is the true definition of tolerance.
So
now we'll put some up this. I don't know if you might need Emma need to write.
Yeah, this is it's true, all of it. They have one child that's expected in August and another in October.
Wait, Dave, they're getting two kids?
Yes.
Yeah. Holy cow.
And Dave is looking embarrassed in the second photo. So, like, I don't think he's looking embarrassed.
I think he realizes, like, oh my God, two kids. I mean,
so yeah, they announced this. Like, Dave did the first part of the direct message announcing this. Like, the first 20 minutes are him announcing show dates. And then I think anybody who got through that, he did this bigger announcement.
Okay. So, now we have one of the top replies.
Conservative Mark Dice.
This is horrifying. Buying women's eggs and then renting other women's wombs to grow their children, who will be deprived of their mothers, instead forced to be raised by two gay men as theirs. Any Christian or conservative congratulating them is just as bad as Marxists.
This has 900 retweets.
That got a lot of likes and retweets. And
really? So they really are going. I thought that these people would find a way to accept anybody so that they could prove that they're not anti-gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Keep but going. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It's relentless. Milo Yiannopoulos, disgusting. They should both be executed. And we will maybe show the change.org petition that apparently Milo is pushing.
What was that?
Trying to get him. They want him.
Oh, my God. Milo wanted them. Oh, God, I can't even
canceled,
believe
it. Almost.
How does this help us with the culture wars? Is Dave Riley?
In the culture war, I felt sorry for the kids, so the children will never know the love of a mother. As someone who lost his mother young, I'll be feeling this children's pain. Okay, go to therapy. There's a lot of talk on the exploitation of women, which in itself is terrible, but what about the exploitation of children? Mothers are very, very important people. Every child needs one. We do important work. Children aren't lifestyle accessories.
They're not getting trans kids, though, are they? They're not getting any trans kids.
Well,
right?
It remains to be seen.
TBD. There's a reason God made mothers. Children need their mothers. This is wrong on so many levels. Dave, I really appreciate you as a person. You are genuinely kind. However, what you're entering into is not a family, and it will harm those children. I hurt for you, even if you can't understand why. Like, I mean, I think we get the picture. I wonder, you know, what these conservatives think about, say, a widower having to raise his kids. I mean, that's a tragedy, but it can be, like, they have zero, respect for or, capacity to understand that fathers can be capable parents too.
I mean, of course. I mean, the amazing thing about this, though, is like, I mean, can you imagine? And again, this is something I've been saying for years. Like, his Glenn Beck has even moved even more Christian right over the years. I don't know if anybody's listened to him, but it is literally, I mean, it is almost like it's all God. Stop.
Bill Maher said we never had to work. Bill Maher said we never had to worry about Christians, the Christian religion. Nobody kills or does anything harmful. Mm. I think that the Bill Maher ship has sailed, so I don't need to.
But that
anymore. I remember that though.
I mean, I can't imagine having. I mean, listen, it's anxiety enough. Like the idea of having one kid coming, your first kid, and to have two kids coming. Like sort of one right after another, that's got to be a lot of anxiety. And then the idea that the adopting, or I should say, or surrogating, I'm not sure what the verb here is, but the idea of having kids becomes a threat on top of the actual threat that kids are to your career, a genuine sort of like existential threat to your career because mm-hmm. you have spent it all pretending or believing that the right is more embracing and denying the fact that you are signing up to work on a network by a group of people who 12 years ago, well, I get maybe no, okay, 16, 17 years ago, were willing to write into the Constitution that your relationship with your husband, your partner, is illegal. Like, I mean, like the amount of delusion that
and
is,
I don't think it's, he's just, I mean, I really think he is an opportunist. He's like one of these opportunist people where he couldn't believe how much money he was making. And he, you know, but I mean, I'm maybe giving him too much credit that he doesn't even think that far into it.
But then it's the chickens coming home to roost. It's the bigoted chickens coming home to roost for Dave. I don't feel badly for him. I mean,
what's
I felt
a little
badly when I went to the change.org petition and I read the comments and all of the top comments used the F slur about him. I did feel a little badly for a second there, but
they called him Fox News.
Yeah.
All right. But I what is he going to do though? What do you think he'll do about this?
I think he's just going to go. I think he's going to. I mean, my guess would be that he's going to. Like, I think like the comedy was maybe part of it. Like maybe I need to pivot to comedy. But I think the other thing is he could just end up becoming more. You know, trying to become even more right wing as a way of sort of like you know, some type of trade off. I mean,
so
I don't know.
Saying he'll hide. He'll start to hide his. The fact
well, that that's the last time you're going to hear about it. He ain't going to be posting baby pictures, I don't think. I mean, maybe, but I would be very surprised.
I'm shocked he even advertised this. Yeah, I mean, that speaks to his stupidity because he had zero understanding of where his audience actually
stands. Well, that's exactly it. That's what sort of makes me feel like maybe it was just delusion. Maybe he just like actually somehow convinced himself that these people were going to embrace that he was going to be some type of trailblazer. Like he doesn't fundamentally understand. Like, and right now, I mean, you go turn on Laura Ingraham tonight or yesterday or whatever day it is. She's railing on this stuff, and Tucker Carlson's railing on this stuff. I mean, the idea of two men having surrogate children and raising them without a mom. I mean. This is all the grooming that Laura Ingraham was talking about.
Well, we have seen in such a short period of time things change with, like, you know, when I started, I've told about this, when I started comedy, you know, most men, if they were gay, they didn't say they were gay or Ellen. I mean, things have changed so much that
we can forget how bad it was, and that even someone like Roy Cohn, he would have set anyone down. I mean, these people didn't care about the issue about. I mean, I don't know how they justified it in their own mind, but they compartmentalized it or something. I don't know, or they're evil.
I'm just reminded that Ben Shapiro, to his face, said, "I would not have go to your wedding." And while they were on camera,
Shapiro posing as the reasonable I swear to God, sometimes I go, what is the appeal on any level? I didn't see the appeal to Rush Limbaugh.
This is the thing that's it's funny you brought that up, because I think I mentioned that I don't know last week or this week that there was in the 90s, like, homophobia became I think even more, 80s was very prominent because of AIDS. But prior to the 80s, homophobia was not so much a thing, because so many men were in the closet that there was not necessarily the homophobia that you would see would be just sort of thrown off. It was just sort of so ingrained into society. It was almost not even a separate thing.
Well, if you watch Johnny Carson and any Tonight Show from the 80s or any of shows, you'll see so much homophobia. It's unbelievable. It's so built in to their making fun of their friends who seem a little swishy or whatever.
Right. And people, there was a lot of comics, I think, in the 90s. I mean, certainly, I mean, in every facet of society, where people were just very, very, very much in the closet. And it was,
Paul Lynde was in the closet. Although those people were, I mean, when I grew up, I didn't, not that I would have cared, because my mother had gay friends, and that wasn't something that I was obviously, thank God, not brought up to think. But I didn't know what gay meant when I'm old enough that I didn't know what gay meant when I was brought up.
Yep. Same. Had no idea. So things have changed, but he just sort of he's walking into a buzzsaw. I mean, I almost feel sorry for him. But I do think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I have to say, it's really it's going to be fascinating to watch.
But it's these people like Colin Powell, who I have so many negative feelings about, obviously. But at one point, he thought the Republican Party. He goes, so what if he was? So what if he was a member of Islam? That was what he was saying. And that sounded nobody even listened. I mean, it's that sounded like a crazy thing to say on the Republican side. I mean, they don't say that anymore. Well, I don't know what's happening with them now. They're just they're all Nazified.
I mean, that was I remember McCain got a ton of praise for shooting down that woman at the rallies, calling Obama a Muslim. He's not a Muslim, as opposed to the Colin Powell thing, because you can't say that. You can't say that if you're running in a if you want to. Well, that was past the primary, but
right. But and didn't get a big reaction, and weren't Republicans going, thank God Colin is standing up for the.
I think McCain got booed at that rally too when he said that. So there you go.
And he had that look on his face, oh no,
it's done.
And things have gotten worse.
Yep. So, Andy, before we go, we have a bit from the announcement.
Yeah, this is from his video announcement. He cut it up without the dates, and so we can play a little bit, see what he actually looks like when he's walking into a buzzsaw.
Yes, we are expanding the family, but I have a belief that when you do things, you don't just go, you go big. So, two babies, people. Two babies are on the way. Those are ultrasounds, what you're seeing over there. This is going to be very confusing to people, and I understand this, right? Wait a minute, you're both dudes. You're showing me two ultrasounds. They don't look exactly the same. What's going on there? Are they twins? Are they something else? We pull those images up again. One of them seems lighter than the other. What is there, a coloration problem? What's going on here? Is this racial? I get it. There's a lot of questions related to all of this. So let me just back up a little bit.
Wait, what? Wait, what is he talking about?
He knows people are going to hate it. He knows he's going to hate it. I know you people hate the gays. This is his feeling of how he's going to win over racists.
Is that just
Nazis.
A function of his like nervousness? Like he's looking at, we're looking at ultrasounds. What is he talking about? Color.
Okay, everybody, before you get upset at these ultrasounds.
All right, but go ahead. This is just, wow.
Related to all of this. So let me just back up a little bit and tell you about our sort of fertility journey. So when you have two men or two women, you're missing a piece, right? You got the sperm or you got the egg, but you don't have a sperm and an egg, right? You don't have a womb. You got to figure out some things here. And you know, by the way, I know most of you guys that are watching this are now on the more conservative side of things. And I never see any real issue with conservatives anymore and gay people, and Trump was the first time president to run being, you know, pro gay marriage.
What? And I think most people what?
Trump was
what?
So
did, wait,
pro.
You've never seen anything with gay people with conservatives? Like, you don't watch the number one watched cable television program or network in the country? You don't watch the network you go on? I rescind.
Your sympathy?
My empathy that I and sympathy that I felt before.
No.
Wow.
He knows he's dead. He knows he's fucked up in a way, or he knows how can he thread this needle?
Oh my God.
Being
Are
gay?
You kidding me? I wonder if he believes it. That's insane. Literally earlier this week, Laura Ingraham is talking about the indoctrination. We could pull a video a day of right wingers talking about how gay people are indoctrinated. Man, that's the whole thing that's going on in Florida, his own state.
Right, don't say gay.
His DeSantis, own state.
Yep. He's done a number of episodes about how great DeSantis is also in the past few months. So,
wow. Go backwards just a little bit. I want just go, that is just, I had no idea he did this. I rescind my sympathy.
I didn't buy your sympathy anyway. So
yeah, well, okay. it was moderately sincere, but now it's whoa.
Sort of fertility journey. When you have two men or two women, you're missing a piece, right? You got the sperm or you got the egg, but you don't have a sperm and an egg, right? You don't have a womb. You got to figure out some things here. And you know, by the way, I know most of you guys that are watching this are now on the more conservative side of things. And I never see any real issue with conservatives anymore and gay people. And Trump was the first, you know, first time president.
I love invoking Trump. Like, you guys like Trump, right?
Of course. That's exactly what's going on there. Yep.
Because he was such a pro-gay.
Pro-gay marriage. And I think most people just kind of want to live and let live and all that. But I know this is like a little bit weird for some people to hear, right? I get it. And by the way, to me, at some level, this is a little bit weird. Like, I've had
because you hate yourself
and go to a lot of doctors, and it's cost a lot of money, and it's been a long sort of adventure.
Pause it. So, okay. Costs a lot of money. Is Dave interested in like maybe having a more expansive conversation about how surrogacy is only an option for a very
rich people?
Few?
Rich yeah. people, right?
Right. That's the only like controversial part about this. Although like it's his individual choice. So who could, I don't particularly care, but, it is, he's not interested
in that. This is why I left the left to go with the people who think I'm against God and think I should be burned alive.
Cause I have just cause of the capitalist critique of surrogacy. Not for me.
How do these people live? How does anyone live with themselves? Sorry.
Let's hear more.
One more time with those ultrasounds, would you? Those are two different wombs, and those are two different babies.
Oh my God!
And I now know an awful lot about birth, and I know an awful lot about zygotes, and I know an awful lot.
I doubt
about
you
wombs
do.
Wait! Pause it. Zygotes? What's that? Doesn't he mean baby? Doesn't he mean
he's talking about preborn
baby?
Yeah,
that's the baby's
right.
name. That's the baby's name. Zygote.
Oh, he's naming
that
the baby.
From Elon Musk.
Zygote. Oh my gosh. I wonder what point those pictures are. I mean, the idea that he acknowledges that that they're zygotes.
Oh my God.
That zygotes even exist is pretty impressive. But I can't wait for him to you know. he's going to be so, so anti-abortion soon. Oh, so he's going to be out on the picket lines. He's going to be.
Exactly.
I witnessed the miracle of life through my surrogacy, and that's why, right.
But that's why he said that. He's like,
This is my face enjoying it, though.
I can't wait till he converts to Christianity in a last desperate attempt to. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, Ben, will you come to my baby's baptism?
Ben, now what's Ben's position?
Ben Shapiro has said to him, despite the fact that they're friends, he would not go to Dave Rubin's wedding because he didn't believe in gay marriage.
What kind of friends are they?
Racist or fascist circle?
Go ahead.
Appointments and all kinds of stuff. So basically what we are doing is we got one egg donor. So you got to think about this. If you need to stop right now and grab a Sharpie and make a chart, you could. So basically we've got plenty of sperm around here. That's one thing, right? So there's a lot.
All right.
He thinks his people are stupid, right? The people will watch him.
So we had half the battle, right? We had half of what we needed, but we needed an egg. So there are egg donors that are out there. These are young.
I know his audience are conservative, but are they six? Like, this is literally the talk I gave Saul when he was like six or seven.
Did you ask him to grab a pen? I know you people are really stupid and consumed with hate. You might not have a pen, but if you do, pick it up.
To donate their eggs, women obviously make a lot of eggs. Don't make eggs, but the donors usually are young and healthy. And if they want to help people that otherwise can't have children, they can donate their eggs. So you basically go on all of these sites, and it's sort of like Tinder or whatever app you were dating on. Swiping through people, and you say, oh, I like this girl had a great education, or some combination thereof, or this one is actually
this is a natural.
Close. I like this person, but they're very far. And, you know, there are different rates and all of these things.
Race! You
know, pause it for 1 second.
Buying a baby?
This is honestly one of the most fascinating things I think I've ever seen.
Really?
I mean, getting past it's a little bit, you know, it's a little remedial. One would imagine that one thinks that their audience has a little bit better knowledge of this. But putting that aside, I'm just trying to imagine. And he acknowledges in this video that most of his audience is now conservative. I'm just trying to imagine, like, all the people watching right now just going like, wow, oh my God. Like, just the absolute, like, indignation, rage, feelings of betrayal. Like, all of the things that, like, I wish I could somehow travel to each one of Dave Rubin's fans' homes, audience homes, and just sit with them for a while as they watch this. Like, that, like, honestly, like, I would.
Just, I can't believe, how does he compete with a market that's more like Alex Jonesy? Isn't this market more like,
No, he's on the Glenn Beck network. And so he's just like there to make conservatives feel like they are right. But what he is telling them is that, like, you're not like, you're good with this, right? And they're just going, what?
No.
What? What? Like, and the amazing thing is, bless his heart, he's trying to explain the process as if, like, oh, if I let people know,
yeah,
if they understand the process and I demystify,
that's where they get off. They just don't understand how.
I mean, this is amazing.
Now, look, if you need to get a pen, if getting a pen will dissipate your hate a little bit, pick up the pen.
Pick up the pen.
That we wanted one egg donor, meaning you get a whole bunch of eggs. Well, hopefully you get a whole bunch of eggs from the egg donor. And then we would take several, you know, we'd split the eggs. So let's say you got...
They're dead? You kill eggs?
And then you take the sperm, we would split them. So now there's like 9 and 9. I'm giving you the rough estimates here. And you would then inseminate them. And then you hopefully from that, some of it takes, some of it doesn't take. But then, in essence, you have these embryos, and then you need surrogates. So the surrogate, obviously, is the woman who then carries the child.
Well, wait. Pause it for 1 second. I'm no doctor, But do you have an embryo before you have a surrogate? Well, probably not. Right? I mean, I'm pretty sure that the embryo doesn't
exist. I'm not sure. Right?
Are there embryos in test tubes and they put them in?
Might be, and then they might, that might be where they insert it. I don't know.
That's all right. He didn't listen to the whole process when the doctor was talking. I'm sure there's.
Well, he's just putting it in racist terms.
Oh, my God.
Let me put this
God.
In layman's racist, just, misogynist terms.
This is amazing. This is amazing. All right,
I love it here is that we have one baby that is from my stuff and one baby that is from David's stuff, but they both will have the same biological mother.
That's two men. That's two men, though.
For the genetic connection. And right now, there are two really fantastic women. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to be a surrogate. This is not something people really do.
Not for a Nazi.
They do it for a higher purpose, for sure. And really, two absolutely amazing women are carrying.
Who like right-wing politics.
So we have two babies, again, one from each of us biologically, but they will be connected through the egg, the genetic material of the mother. One baby will be born in August.
Genetic material
will be born in October, so they are not going to be twins in a technical sense, but they are as a life going forward. I think they'll really be thought of as twins because, you know, two months means nothing, and they'll be in the same grade. And
you know, he's not thinking anything in his mind except
through the
what have I done
process of how to do this. And I can assure you that it is not cheap. It is definitely easier if you got a man.
That's what his audience is concerned about. Well, it's not cheap. I mean, it is his like 3/4 of his audience are sitting there going like, this is an abomination. It is the most sinful playing of God. It is an affront to every single thing that I believe. The idea that you have like six women, it's like some type of like, you know, like two mothers and a third mother and two men. And they're and like, their minds are exploding. And he goes, but I assure you, it's not cheap. I mean,
if that was your concern.
Honestly, I mean,
well, it's a fake audience that's not out there, right, guys? There is no audience of anybody who's liberal on social issues, right? But then is a Nazi in every other way. It just doesn't exist, that audience. So
he's becoming anti-abortion too. But it is. I'm just amazed. I mean, I hope. You know, obviously, I hope well for the kids and this and that. But I got to say, like, whoa, this is going to be amazing. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like, you know, like if we could hire a special correspondent to just be following like what they do to him on his Reddit board or I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, here's just one comment on the YouTube. Always enjoy your perspective on politics and culture, but I can't help but be skeptical about this. And by the way, his YouTube, I get the sense that it's been pruned a little bit. I think without a natural mother and father, raising the child will have a deep wound that can't be healed.
True.
What you did is done, and I wish you and your family success and happiness. Like, that's one of the nicer ones. But
done is done.
You see a lot of comments being like, Dave, I'm sorry about all the ones that are upvoted are like, Dave, I'm sorry about all the negative comments you're getting about all this stuff. And it's stuff like, you know, I will put this from back up from the video. It's stuff like, you're a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
The appropriate corrective action would be to give this child to a mother. That's messed up, man. This is where conservatism and merely the love of liberty diverge. Oh, here's the ideological crux. This situation prioritizes the desires of adults over the best interests of kids, says this fan of Dave Rubin. So,
because most kids are anti-gay.
It is.
They need the mother.
Wow.
I'll tell you something. I had my mother, and it wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. I sometimes wish I had two men.
Andy Kinlan.
That's been our Dave Rubin hour.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, great.
1 hour on Dave Rubin.
It has been an amazing Dave Rubin week.
I feel like I'm sweated out from it. You know what I mean?
Cathartic.
Imagine his
sweat. Is going to be fascinating. This, I mean, just fascinating to watch this.
It's a new era.
Yep, it is definitely a new era. Andy, I am so glad that you were here to watch it being born. We obviously inseminated this before you came on.
Right.
And we had it in a surrogate.
Right.
And then we gave birth to it, or we watched it get birth today. And I'm so glad you were here for that.
I also love the way he soft sells the thing. He goes, you know, and then we need some kind of woman's genetic material. Yeah. Maybe if I hide that part, they'll forget that I'm gay. Maybe.
I just want to, like, I'm just so curious as to, like, what part of what he was delivering to his audience did he think would be like, this is going to mitigate it? When they find out it is expensive. But I think also people are going to be psyched to hear about the process.
They really will be.
Oh, my gosh. And then, you know, I also, like, just have that sort of, like, the idea that this dude's getting twins and his producer also is one of the parents. Like, they're going to be, they're going to put out, like, one show every 2 weeks. That's-
I love this. I love when they start resenting. No, I don't really mean that, of course. I'm not going to love when they start resenting their children.
No, I'm sure that but that's going to be amazing. And it's going to be amazing. I'm here for all of it. I'm going to watch. I can't wait for the massive weight gain that Dave gets because he's so tired and needs to eat constantly to stay awake because of the two kids. And
well, maybe Rogan will give him some kind of ivermectin, you know, thing that can help.
I got to say, that takes a lot of guts to do two kids at one, like to like.
Yeah,
on twins, man, oh man.
He's really blitzing.
I didn't mean to.
They're
no
gonna have
intended.
Some. They're gonna have a night nurse. There's just no shot that they're.
I know, but like. still, it's like. Then you have
rich
to live with.
People don't really raise their kids. Is something I'm figuring.
That's
out.
True.
I mean, I think
but he
that
might
may
not
be case,
rich forever. I'm hoping,
but even still, I mean,
he's got a mortgage to pay.
Yeah, he's made a big move to Florida. Andy, what should we know? What should people do? Just Thought Spiral?
Thought Spiral is still good. I'm sorry for the. In fact, I'm doing a Thought Spiral.
No, your phone's blowing up. Your phone's blowing up.
No, I'm doing a Thought Spiral thing right after this. That's how busy I am. And then also, please still buy my comedy album, Hence the Humor. It's so funny. I'm delightful on it. I'm sorry. I feel like there's something wrong with me and that you're so nice to me. But this doesn't go out on the air, right?
Nobody's going to see this.
Oh, thank
Nobody
God.
Nobody sees this anymore. No, our channel is completely over anyways. We're done. So
I love you guys very much.
All right, Andy. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Emma.
Thanks,
Matt. Thanks, Bradley. All right.
Bradley's not here.
I don't know what I'm saying even half the time.
He's on vacation.
I thought Bradley was Siri for a couple of weeks.
I don't know what that means.
Andy, I know. This is the hardest part, is how do I say goodbye?
He doesn't literally know how to turn it off. Can you dump him, Matt?
Dump me.
Matt, can you dump him?
Yeah, I'll dump him.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Freebie Friday, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wow. Look at that. I cannot believe we just did 1 hour on Dave Rubin.
We
one
didn't do an hour on him.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Did we? No.
Yes. Yes.
At least a good 45.
That was, I mean, that was worth it.
I mean, I honestly,
like, I know maybe people, are, I don't know if people are thinking like, this is what, why is, I find the attempt at comedy, that was fascinating because like, what's going on in his mind that he looks at this and goes like, hey, this is funny. And, but I gotta say, the other thing is just, I think, really fascinating. Because, like, at the end of the day, you don't need, you know, I don't need the audience to approve of me to enjoy, you know, or, you know, I don't know what it is that I would enjoy that the audience would approve of. But, like, he doesn't need his audience to approve to enjoy the experience of being a parent.
Right.
Or not enjoy the experience of being a parent, whatever it is. Both happen. But it is really fascinating. Like, I don't know, like, we have...
But he sought that approval is interesting.
When the comments are things like, woe to those who call good or evil good.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when Rush Limbaugh... I remember where I was, actually. I was pulling into a parking lot in Venice, California. I was working on a TV show, and it got announced on the phone, on the radio, that Limbaugh was arrested for pulling out $9,900 in cash from different bank accounts because he had this Oxy addiction. And I remember thinking, like, how is his audience going to react to this? Right. Because he spent so much of his career talking about addiction as a moral failing. And they really did not punish him in any way. But this is of a completely different magnitude and order, and there was a redemption arc for Limbaugh, right? I was an addict and now I'm not, and I feel bad about it and this and that. Yeah. There's no redemption arc for Ruben in this.
And the politics are going in the exact wrong direction on these issues for
him. It's like cresting now.
Yeah, it's bad timing for this.
This is going to be their thing. And this is, it really is fascinating. I don't know that we've ever seen anything quite like this. I mean, you know, you can have like Jim Baker, you know, and we've seen, I guess, some people, you know, like pastors and this and that, you know, of like mega churches fall from grace. But I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this. And it's fascinating. I mean, it's like, you know, I remember when Ellen came out, it was a big deal. Remember when she kissed a woman on TV? It was a scandal. And I'm sure she lost some audience, but she gained some audience.
Her show got canceled because she came out.
Was that what it was?
Her sitcom.
Did it?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. But yes, I'm not surprised, but this is a completely different, I think it's fascinating. I think it's really fascinating. I mean, wow. Cause I thought that what would happen is that he would have to like, distance himself from his husband at this point or close to it within his sort of back trajectory. And so I do think he deserves credit for being this deluded as to how his audience is going to react.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And both in a good and a bad way.
Yeah.
But that said, you know, we're not going to stop mocking him when he puts stuff out that we think is funny. Should we do this Jimmy Dore thing?
I go back and forth, but...
I mean, now that we've said that we might do it, we probably have to.
Well, we don't have to do anything.
All right.
Read some IMs and see how we feel.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have time to do phone calls. I thought we would.
Too much comedy today.
Yeah, too much. Okay. You like Black and White Stripes. Sam, you gutless zebra effer. Before I continue, please don't say zebra effer. Say the real world word. Say my name is Sam Cedar and I am a zebra effer. I F zebras. Anyway, I've long been a fan of the show and I appreciate the hard work that you and all the MR team put into your viewers. Informed in a world of unfortunately vast and formidable darkness, you stand as an exemplar. A good faith, good-hearted, good-humored approach to even the most serious issues is not only possible, perhaps even necessary. Behind all the noise of bills signed or not, of votes forced or not, smackdowns and debates and critiques and takes, I think the core of your message is always to promote love, kindness, and humanity. There is no more noble pursuit than that. And for myself and all MR fans, I want to say thank you for doing it. I know something's coming.
Yeah.
You should be proud of all the mark you've made on this world. With all that said, I just want to ask, how do you pull off looking like both a school child and someone who legally must stay 100 yards from school?
Rollercoaster.
Oliver Wendell Holmeslice. My favorite moment in Harry Potter is when he casts the no-fly zone spell over Hogwarts.
I don't want to be dorky. Keep going.
No, there is a no-fly zone. Yes, they had it in the final. Yes, of course.
Yes,
Red Emma's turning. Oh my god!
But it was penetrable.
This was called bait, Emma, and you've just walked right into it.
I know. It's really not that hard to bait me. Really not.
Lionel Hutz, Dave Rubin's kids aren't going to be allowed to talk about their parents at school in Florida because of the narratives that Dave Rubin helps promote.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am really, it's going to be fascinating. I want to move down to Florida. Like, I want to sit on his front lawn and watch this.
Yeah.
Michael Tracy's delightful girlfriend. And I should just say, this I am.
How
apparently,
dare you?
Apparently, this came up in a, some other video. I don't know what it was. Honestly, I don't remember. I don't know when it was where we were, you know, talking about Michael Tracy's girlfriend. And I don't know Michael Tracy's girlfriend. I don't know that he has a girlfriend. I'm only repeating what Glenn Greenwald told me and the world on Twitter. That's all. That's it.
He felt it was necessary to tweet out the fact that Michael Tracy has a girlfriend.
Yes. And so
unprompted,
we make jokes about it. About that and the IAMer, who I don't know who the IAMer is. I don't know who any of these people are, you know, personally. Although, you know, I met like Train Boy the other night at a show. Uses Michael Tracy's delightful girlfriend as a joke. And I will cop to it's a running joke. It's a running joke that
it's,
we
it's
sometimes
because
reference.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's very funny.
But I want to make it clear. I'm not investigating whether he has a girlfriend or not. My presumption is he does.
Probably.
Sure. I can't validate that.
Why are
that,
you
though.
Presuming?
Well, because Glenn said it. And so I'm giving the presumption until I see some evidence to the contrary. I can't speculate. Many, many different people find love. Many, many, you know, many, many different people have different tastes and are looking for different things in their partners or, you know, so I don't spend any time speculating about her or investigating her or anything that Michael Tracy does. I saw somebody say on Twitter that he lives with his mom. I assume that was a joke. I don't take it seriously. I don't know, but maybe it's true. I have no idea. But we're all memes. People make memes about me. Like, I don't, you know, my calves or that I'm, you know, I mean, it just, you got to let it go. If you're going to get out there and you're going to be a Twitter and you're going to make money on Substack and or on YouTube or wherever it is, you got to accept that people are going to mock you for different things about you.
Yeah. Or you could.
We're just mocking content. Him. I just want to make it clear. We don't take it seriously, Michael. We don't take you seriously.
Yes. We just want to be clear. This is a sign of disrespect because we don't think you're good.
Yeah. We think your reporting is worth scorn. I mean, we also take issue with the many errors you make in reporting as well. It's also funny just to comment on the personal stuff.
Yes. Why can't people understand?
And we
that?
Wouldn't comment on the personal stuff if Glenn had not volunteered said information.
Yeah,
which was funny.
I wouldn't have known. I'm not, in fact, we're not even commenting that he has a girlfriend. We're commenting on the idea that Glenn made it
it needed to be stated.
That it needed to be stated, or for whatever reason. Like, I don't care if Michael Tracy has a girlfriend. It never even occurred to me. Maybe he's married. Maybe he's not married. Maybe he has multiple girlfriends. It's just that we're not making fun of him having a girlfriend. We're making fun of the fact that Glenn Greenwald felt that he had to make some type of political argument by stating that
you all think this guy's a loser, but he actually has a girlfriend and does work occasionally.
Delightful girlfriend.
Right.
Right. Obviously.
Well, yeah.
I probably shouldn't even spend all that time on it, but I just, you know, this guy writes it. Thank you for having Andy Kindler on today. I think we needed his expertise to deconstruct that Darlene Rudin clip from the other day.
Do you think the right would be happier about the maternal presence in the Rubin household if Dave was to dress up as Darlene in his parenting?
The presence of a mother.
I wonder if that was some type of like. No. I wonder if that was some type of like.
Your galaxy braining.
But I mean,
you understand. Like, I'm so blown away by all this. I think it's amazing. I think it's one of the most sort of culturally significant things that like.
You're losing your grip.
I just think that really just. Talia from Tampa. Hey, I'm our crew. Proud to say today marks 5 out of 5 days I've remembered to write in this week. Sent you a really depressing things about rent, abortion laws, trans laws. So how about something more fun? New Haven pizza, New York pizza, or Chicago style? There's only one right answer. Well, New Haven pizza is supposed to be the best. I also love New York style pizza.
Wait, can you repeat it again? What are the questions?
New York, New Haven, or Chicago?
Chicago's disgusting. There's no, like, deep dish is not pizza. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think it's delicious. What's New Haven?
New Haven's like more New York-y than New York. New Haven's supposed to be the best pizza. I don't think I'm sorry for going so hard
on Chicago style, but I don't like pizza when it's too cheesy because it's just like overwhelming.
It's also too doughy.
Yeah.
There's a Lou Malnati's and there's another one downtown Chicago, and I remember having a cold piece of it from the hotel fridge one time, and it the thickness is just wonderful.
Oof. I don't know.
Attorney Andrew, I have majority report brainworms such that when I see the words casual Friday, I immediately think of Cliff Schechter, which reminds me, has anyone gotten their signed Mark Hamill photo yet? It's been a few years and I understand these things take time. Left-handed stranger, in reference to Ben Shapiro clip Emma and Matt played yesterday, let's just say hypothetically Biden does end up helping a little more with Ukraine. Let's say hypothetically that this happens, and the next thing you know, we are at a temporarily non-nuclear war with Russia. How quickly do you think the conservatives will switch their tune from Biden is weak and afraid of conflict, blah, 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 gas prices, blah, 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 to Biden started World War III, he's evil, blah, blah, blah. It's a head I win, tells you lose scenario, combined with a little we've been at war with East Asia in 1984 rhetoric.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just, I think, motivated on their calculation of what's good for the Republican Party this day, as opposed to any sort of principle. But I'm not sure about that. I think they would. I think the general thing is to want to support more aggressive military action.
Two kids in a trench coat. Do these civil abortion laws violate the Eighth Amendment clause against unreasonable fines? Like if hundreds of people can sue at $10,000 or $20,000 a pop, how is that not an unreasonable fine? It's not a fine. Like, I mean, like legalistically speaking, it is not a fine. A private citizen can't fine you. It's a tort proceeding. I mean, Helen, from what I've seen of the AFPAC coverage, there seems to be a lot of Republican members who don't research the invites they're sent. So I'm going to set up a conference in the name of the unholy master Satan and see if they attend or research. Now, Sam's hanging Chad. Hey, Sam, Emma, my little old school from New Mexico pulled off an upset last night in the NCAA tournament. Love to see underdogs win, especially when they're smaller university from a smaller conference that doesn't have the financial backing of blue bloods of the NCAA do. Can I please get a shofar for my New Mexico State Aggies?
Congrats.
Is that for real?
I'm not really watching March Madness this year so far.
There you go.
But I did try to go on DraftKings to bet on hockey, as I do often, and it crashed from March Madness after Gonzaga won. So, wow.
Van Regan, I love hearing Sam say the word eczema. All right. Crab saltine cracker. How long until we see firms incorporated with the express purpose of bringing in people to sue over abortions and split the bounties? Moments.
And it's all, you know, all those like conservative Christian organizations that fund right-wing politicians are going to be in on that too.
Those children will have a mother though. Darlene Rubin.
Rudin.
Oh, Rudin. Yeah, sorry.
I messed up the writing of the joke there.
I'm sorry. Ronald Reagan, at the Rubin show, the whole joke was that the left was engaged in oppression Olympics, when in reality, there is no real oppression. I remember thinking how arrogant it was for this guy to be standing on the shoulders of activists who fought for his rights to exist as a gay man over many decades, and to watch him align with people like Shapiro who are actively engaged in undermining those rights. Yeah, well, I think he's about to find out. I mean, Nolan from the Detroit suburbs. MR Crew, I was curious if any of you fans are fans of Star Trek, the original series, or The Next Generation, or some other Star Trek show. This came up in my head because a few coworkers have said how TV shows or movies are too political now. But I always think of how political of a show Star Trek was. Yeah, Star Trek was a very political show.
Also, like, I think comic books, yeah.
Especially when you think about how the Federation Society is much more socialist than ours, where basic needs are no longer commodities and the acquisition of wealth is no longer a part of the culture of in the Federation. I think a lot of these things were just like more, maybe a little bit more subtle, or there wasn't enough. I don't know if shows have gotten more political. There's just more shows. A and B, I think also there's less opportunities to assess and analyze them. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, like our culture is such now that there is no subtle, there is no, like, I didn't know that show was political. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is the internet and all the writing that goes around it, and the people who are trying to politicize things point out how political these things are. The one thing you could argue is that maybe things aren't as political as, even if they're intended to be, unless somebody analyzes them as political. Like, I don't know, you know, the future which was, you know, completely socialist in terms of Star Trek, if people absorb that in that way. I don't know. Jen Hexer. Maybe we need somebody younger in Nancy's office, somebody who can walk and chew gum at the same time. Democrats are playing to the smallest slice of the audience possible. I agree. Kristen's need. Sam, can you wish my husband, Dr. Ryan, a good... He's headed off to his job to fight for proper pay, increased education quality, and safety at his college. That sounds like a good thing to do. How about one of these? Let's see. Bull Prague, do you think there's calculation in the decision-making regarding Ukraine of a propaganda campaign that would trigger a U.S. civil war? That Tim Pool hasn't taken that angle has me wondering. I don't think so. Zephi, if this war is mercifully over soon, how will the Dems run on it? They have no answers to questions about other stuff eventually. Yes, I agree with you. I think they just like they're trying to play out the clock, and it's not going to work. I don't think it's going to work at all. Dr. Kalt, I'm from Germany, but live in the U.S. My dad lives in Berlin, is married to a Russian-Ukrainian. Apparently, they get all their news from Russian state media, and it's become increasingly impossible for me to talk to him simply due to how much absolute BS he's telling me fresh off of Russian TV. It's wild. It pretty much confirms what people report in terms of Russians getting an unhealthy dose of propaganda from their media. What's, of course, an added wrinkle is that my dad is German and certainly not lacking in access to good information. There's a real
parallel to, like, you know, people who watch Fox, immerse themselves in Fox. And it's not just like, I don't think that you get the full story watching CNN or MSNBC or any given outlet. And they certainly have their propagandistic slants, and they get things wrong occasionally, et cetera, et cetera. But the fervor of a Fox viewer in terms of, like, and how far afield they are. This is not like, you know, people are being told to channel their views into, like, a more national security state, you know, it is like, you look outside, it's 12 noon. It is the middle of the night. It's amazing, I think. All right, what do you say? 10 more of these?
Yeah.
Margot from Mass. Worst poem ever from the very Irish part of our lives. Person comes out as queer thanks to the influence of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Would be great fodder for Michael character we never got. Yeah. Emma's Gambit. Just want to thank Sam for being very Jewish part of our lives. Gives yourself a shofar. Appreciate that. Anonymous. Hi, Sam. 15 years ago, I fell pregnant after a condom split. I was aware of testing for pregnancy and booked an abortion, but I was still 8 weeks before I got the abortion. I feel devastated for women in Texas.
Yeah. Again, the 6 week thing, we've covered this on the show a million times, but women probably don't even, like, think twice about it if they're like 5 days, a week late for their period. And then you're already at 5 weeks, and that requires you to get a test, figure it out, make a plan, take off work. It's just, it's a completely nearly impossible bar to cross, bar to clear, I should say, if you don't have a lot of resources. And that's what this is designed to do. Because a lot of, like, the women related to these Republican politicians pushing this, if they have the means, they can probably get an abortion if they need to. That's the point.
Yeah. Freebie Friday. Remember when Rubin told Trump Jr. and everybody else in the world that people can call him the F slur and it'd be fine because it's their right? There's a great YouTube clip of Michael sitting in with TYT to react to it.
Do you remember that?
Dan, I remember when he said it. I don't remember Michael on TYT with it, but Dan from Columbus. A couple of years ago, Dr. Jordan Peterson equated being raised by a same-sex couple as being raised by one parent.
Oof. That's very ironic because Ruben literally invoked Dr. Jordan Peterson in saying why he needed to. Because, like, my husband wanted this, and I was on tour with this guy, Jordan Peterson, who said, you know, if you don't become a father, you don't become a full human being, and you need to become a parent to get that. So he might have been hearing what he wanted to hear there.
Interesting. Aaron is not cool. Please have R.M. Brown on. He'd be an excellent fun half guest like Ben Gleeboys. He also lives in Texas and had been reporting on anti-choice laws that are going down. He's funnier than C.K. Louie, the comedian. Calling somebody something political is de-empowering to a piece of work. In the same way that race criticism is CRT, art has reflected on rights and racism for centuries. But calling it political is an effort to middle the waters or muddy the waters. I'm not sure.
Probably. They're writing on their phone.
R.M. Brown.
Someone has written in about that person before.
All right. Note taken. Where are we? How many have I done? Josh, it's from Tucson. I love the interview yesterday, Emma. You guys should interview Catherine Bertin, author of Stand, a memoir on activism, a manual for progress.
Okay, cool.
Matt, will you write that one down?
Yeah, look for it.
Okay. And let's see here. Ba-ba-ba. TGIF, am I right, folks? Warren from Toronto. Emma, appreciate you pointing out Perrine's Winnipeg Jets hat. My friend and I watched the show. We're the only leftists we knew who loved hockey. So when we found out you were a Rangers fan, It's like, wait, there are others like us? Unfortunately, as you can imagine, the politics of hockey in Ontario isn't exactly the best aside from some of the progressive media.
Yeah. I mean, like, I like basketball, but I like hockey and football more. And it's not both sports, not exactly bastions of progressive politics.
Train rocks. Can't wait for conservatives to burn Dave's book. Wayne Kerr. It's sad how many conservative women think the most important part of being a mother is having a vulva.
Ugh. Okay.
Chris Burdick. It's not like Michael Tracy's taking the time out to listen to your mockery of him. He's far too busy effing his way through the phone book. CIA handler. I love watching the Rubin report with Sam Cedar. Mark Monkey. If you're doing pizza discourse, there was no more leftist pizza than Detroit deep dish. It was literally created by laborers who cooked their pizza in square oil pans on hot engines. Leftists should be all about that.
And I'm with you at the deep dish.
The final IM of the week. James Darwin. Sam, I'm only 1/32nd Irish, so St. Patrick's Day doesn't mean much to do. Luckily, I received text message yesterday from Larry Mullen Jr., who sent me this poem and assured me it's authentic Irish vintage. There once was a man from Nantucket. Matt, Emma, Matt was doing double duty this week. Good job, guys, or the past 2 days. Good job, guys. Folks, have a great weekend. We will see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost the drive.